Welcome. You're listening to the Mac Observer's Background Mode. This is your host, John Marcellaro. And this week, my guest is Michael Gartenberg, a return visit from Apple's former Senior Director of Product Marketing and now writing for Jason at Six Colors. Michael, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back. It's been a while.
It has. It's been too long. I really enjoy having you on the show to chat about what Apple's up to because you're in the know, having spent some time there, and it's always interesting to hear your views about what Apple's up to. This session, I wanted to ask you about Apple's fall lineup. You know, 2018 was kind of lean in the early part of the year. We got the MacBook Pros at WWDC, and we were really sitting on our hands wondering whether we were going to see Macs in the fall, and we got them. That's pretty cool.
We got them. We got Macs. We got iPads. We got iPhones. Got a whole lot of stuff. Still some things missing in action, like the AirPower that we never heard about, sort of like, on Happy Days, like when they just got rid of like Richie Cunningham's older brother and just disappeared. We never heard from him again and vanished.
That's kind of unusual for Apple. I read that there were some technical issues with quality and it didn't work the way Apple wanted it to work. But boy, it seems like it's taking Apple a long time to do the engineering and get it right.
Yeah, you wonder what's going on because it seems like we've seen products from other companies like Samsung that at least seem to do similar things. Although I guess from what I've heard, Apple was trying to do things that were somewhat more sophisticated. But it's pretty unusual for engineering and marketing to be so far out of sync. But yeah, I mean, it was a year for a lot of delayed products. You know, we had delays of HomePod, we had delays of HomePod features, we had delays of iOS features that were coming that eventually showed up.
Like FaceTime.
Group FaceTime, for example. But I think it appears that Apple has gotten itself somewhat back on track. And I think that product is just going to be one of those things that, in the future, someone's going to ask Bill Shorby. I was going to go, what? I don't know what you're talking about. We never introduced a product like that. As they busily, work and scrub the product intro videos from the internet to make sure they all disappear. Other than that, it's been a pretty, good year for Apple, pretty solid year. We've hit some interesting bumps. Probably say the more interesting Apple, if you're an Apple Watcher news, was the fact that Apple's no longer telling us how many of each product it's sold anymore.
What do you think of that? Is that a cover up for a difficult situation trying to make the best of a bad future for unit sales, or is it something that really has some substance in its value?
You know, Steve Jobs used to mock Amazon when they would talk about how great products like the Kindle were selling on Amazon. And they'd say it was like their best product sold ever, or we best selling product that we ever did on Black Friday, but without revealing any numbers. And Jobs would sort of like downplay that. I forget his exact quotes, but it was fairly dismissive of, if you have something to say, you talk about numbers. If you don't have anything to say, then you don't talk about numbers. And so Apple doesn't want to talk about numbers. To be fair, again, we're getting kind of geeky financially here, is do we care about how many widgets Apple has sold, or do we care how much money Apple has made? If you're
That's just the first question. The second question is how much money Apple's making a soft, precarious cover-up kind of situation where if they focus too much on how much money they're making, they can sour the customers. They can forget about the mission. It's great when you're making a lot of money, but to take it to its logical extreme, mathematically, Apple could be making more and more money and selling less and less and less until they make a lot of money selling nothing.
Right. Well, or it gets to the point where we've only sold 5 iPhones, but we sold each one of those for $10 billion.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
So, we thought it's a pretty selective market. You know, it's gone way up in 2020.
It could be precarious. I think that's what investors are worried about.
I think that the concern is, well, investors, again, don't care. I mean, Apple could be selling carrots, if you will. And if they're selling enough of them, making enough money, investors don't care what business Apple's in, as long as that business involves Apple making money and ultimately the shareholders making money. The question is, shareholders are going to be going, well, where is the money coming from? Apple would prefer people didn't ask that question. And it's partially because it's a way of getting away from the idea of a hit product. The iPod was the product that carried Apple for a very long time. Then the iPhone.
The iPod Touch is still for sale, by the way. That's amazing.
It is, although I was in the store, and they have them on display, like in the speakers. I couldn't see one that you could actually buy one in the store. And they're probably hidden somewhere. But yeah, I mean, I guess there are people who still want an iPod. I can imagine if you like music and you don't really like smartphones, you probably would want an iPod or an iPod Touch. But it goes to the question of, Apple getting away from the idea of it being around one product. Because if it's totally focused around one product, and then that one product eventually hits a saturation point, it becomes a problem. I think Apple would prefer to be seen as Apple Inc. It's a company that makes phones, and it makes computers, and it makes tablets, and it makes watches, and it does services. Although when we talk about services, services for Apple is sort of always a little bit of a misnomer, because I'm always curious, what are those services other than Apple Music? It's not like tons of people are spending money. Apple's not a cloud provider in the sense of Amazon or Microsoft or Drop or Box. iCloud is sort of there to help device sales, not necessarily something people buy in and of themselves. So, as Apple becomes this more diverse company, I think that's the way it would prefer Wall Street look at it, rather than say you've sold this many of these things or that many of those things. That said, it also helps us take our eye off the fact that the prices of these devices are going up. Someone once said to me over the weekend and said, what's going on with Apple? It used to be that technology is that the longer you waited, the more you got for your money. You got more for your money and the price stayed the same, or the price went down. And now it's like, well, if you want more for your money, you need some more for your money, but you're going to pay a lot more for your money as well. So the prices, you get more, but the prices continue to go up. And there is no place to go where the prices continually say, okay, I'll just, take what I have and let the prices go down. That doesn't seem to be happening when it comes to Apple and technology.
There's no money in low prices.
It's like the technology curve was always in the sense of, if the auto industry kept up to, the technology industry, you'd be able to buy a Bentley for $500. And today what we're seeing is this increasing prices of the phones, to the point where we look at a phone like the iPhone, XR, and say, wow, $749, that's a bargain phone. It's like, bargain for who? Relative to what?
Yeah, but look what it does. I was just writing the other day about the 2013 Mac Pro, which in a normal configuration would run you at least $3,000 back in 2013. And today you can buy a Mac Mini with roughly the same power for about half that price. So right. In that sense, we are getting more power for our money, even though we're paying more.
Right. And then the question is, what are we doing? What are we getting with all of that power? What is that power doing for us? And that's, to me, where Apple's marketing is comes into play. So I do think that we're, probably if you have numbers to talk about, you talk about numbers. And if you don't have the numbers, or you want to get people away from that particular conversation, or at least start getting away from that conversation before you need to get people away from that conversation, that's where Apple has done. And they've also noticed that no one has really, nothing's really bad has happened to places like Amazon for not reporting numbers. So I think Apple has simply said, let's try and make this particular problem go away. At which point, you know, you end up with lots of speculation. And I think there's a hard press. It looks like, you know, this quarter for Apple to reaching out to press and journalists to try and tell a story saying it's not about numbers and it's about average selling prices. On the other hand, as you said, Apple doesn't want to talk about how average selling prices are going up because that tends to alienate consumers who are going, wait, you want more money from us? And so that kind of shifted into the other talking point was, yeah, we're not going to talk about product numbers, in which we all seem to think means Apple's selling fewer products, which seems to mean they're offsetting it by selling more expensive products. But then Apple following it up with an interesting thing saying, we want our products to last longer. And, you know, consumers shouldn't have, you know, won't have to upgrade them all that more often. And then kind of in a very Apple way saying it's like an environmental message because, you know, our products are going to last longer and therefore they won't end up in, you know, landfills. That's all good for the environment. So buy your product. It's going to be expensive, but you'll get more use out of it. And that's a great message in 2018. I'm curious, come September, is Apple going to say, we really didn't introduce any new products this year because, frankly, we want everyone's products to last longer and we don't want anyone buying anything.
Well, you know, I do appreciate
for another year.
I do appreciate Apple's handling of the MacBook Pros and the Mac Pro in that in times past, the Pro device was just a little bit painfully more expensive than the consumer device by a bit. It was labeled Pro, but it wasn't really, in some people's eyes, Pro class. And Apple said, okay, we're done with that. We're going to make really Pro equipment. And so we're getting the 2019 Mac Pro. We got the 2018 iMac Pro. We got some really powerful Coffee Lake MacBook Pros with USB-C and 32 gigabytes of RAM and the 15-inch. So in that sense, like I think I kind of appreciate Apple catering to the technical professionals and saying, look, you wanted more power, more capability. Yeah, here it is. They'll pay a little more, though.
Right. And in that sense, that's good. The question that I look at is a product like, for example, the MacBook Air, which effectively got a price bump. Depending on how you look at it, and because under most normal technical times, we'd have said, "Wow, look at that new MacBook Air! Oh, and it's coming in at a $999 price point,
right?
Not coming in $1,199 price point. You wanted a Retina display? Well, we gave you one, but you're going to pay extra for it. So that was sort of interesting. That's out there in the Mac line, in the phone line. Again, there's some, it was almost to me a bit of a weird phone lineup because.
Before we jump to the phones though, let's kind of focus on the Macs for a second. So
sure.
How did you react to waiting 4 years for a new Mac Mini, waiting a long, long time for a MacBook Air, so many products. So we waited and waited and then we got this confusion about, well, where's the MacBook now? Is that an orphaned product? Why doesn't the MacBook Air have an i7? It seems to be like Apple's still playing it by ear when it comes to coherency in the Mac lineup.
It feels like, well, I mean, certainly the Mini and the MacBook Air team felt like they were trapped in, you know, Antarctic ice with Captain America for like, you know, the last 5-10 years, and only recently were discovered and thought out and could build new products. And, you know, they've all changed. The Mac Mini is not the product of, the low non-Apple tax product that you can buy from Apple, the switcher product, bring your own mouse and keyboard and monitor. Now it is that, sort of pro machine, but not really. That people are going to use for servers.
Really, yeah. Some sites have been dinging the Mac Mini on its graphics performance.
Yeah, that's me sort of the weird. Again, it's one of those strange products because you can take this Mac Mini and turn it into something that can cost what, like up to like $2,500, $2,600. And then you still end up with something that has absolutely no graphics performance whatsoever. Like it wouldn't even be a good gaming machine.
Right.
Much less a pro machine. So you kind of scratch your head and go, huh? on the other hand,
well, it seems like Apple was catering to the people who loved it as a simple home desktop or as a server in a closet.
Right. So at which point it makes sense. But again, you kind of have to start putting, like, there wasn't a whole lot of marketing around who this was for. It was a question of, if you wanted a Mac Mini, well, we're giving you one. But you're certainly not going to buy that product as a replacement for one of the pro devices just because of the graphics issues, because it's just not performing well. And at $2,500, it's too expensive as a maxed out desktop for doing Microsoft Word or Keynote and Pages. So it's a strange product that's out there. But there's clearly demand for it. It probably doesn't cost that much to build. And so it was good to see the refresh. And $799 is not a bad starting point, although you don't get a lot for $799. For $799, you do get that fairly bare bones experience. And there's also not as many people with desktop machines with mice, keyboards, and monitors that are saying, okay, we just want to replace the computer port. We're going to keep the rest of the stuff. So I think that model changed. On the Air side, people said this is the product that we wanted. The Air, once it hit its stride, became one of Apple's best-selling products. It was a design that defined the industry. Every product from Apple's competitors afterward looked exactly like a MacBook Air, to the point where they copied the flaws almost as well as there's an urban legend of in the garment industry of someone who took a designer jacket and sent it to China to make a bunch of knockoffs, and it came back and they had 10,000 of these jackets, and they all had the identical cigarette burn on the sleeve that was on there when it was sent over.
Phil Schiller say it was the number one selling MacBook? I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, if he didn't, it should be. we'll never know for sure if it's the best selling anymore, but it was clearly a device that resonated. There were people I know more recent stuff was introduced. I remember Walt Mossberg went out and bought three of the existing ones in case Apple was ever going to stop making them, because he was concerned that the stuff that it was replacing it was just not good enough for him. And so it's a great product. It did what Apple wanted it to do, but then it just sat there. Then you had the introduction of the MacBook. And I remember because I was at Apple when the MacBook, or at least what we now call the MacBook today, was introduced. And I was kind of blown away by it. There was so much technology in there. When I first saw it, you were putting a 12-inch screen in an 11-inch body, the butterfly keyboard, the new track pads, USB-C. I mean, it was a real device. And that device, when it was introduced, was supposed to be the new MacBook Air, in the sense of it was going to be the high-end, the same way when MacBook Air was introduced. It was sort of this high-end product that, fit into thing. But most people forget when MacBook Air was first introduced, it was a really niche product. It was super expensive. It was much more expensive relative to anything else that you could get in the Apple product line. You were buying it for the form factor and the coolness. And that was what the MacBook was supposed to be, but it never quite took that place in the product line. And it was sort of this almost a replacement to this 11-inch MacBook Air at a much higher price point.
Yeah.
I think kind of overpowered.
My perception was that it was just a little bit too cool, too thin, too small to have the guts that could satisfy.
Yeah. It was just a little too not enough.
Yeah.
And it was way too much of something else, and that was expensive. If you were looking at that product, I think that was a product that people might have looked at in the store and then said, I'm buying one of those, I'll take a MacBook Air even without the Retina display.
Right.
So at that point, even Retina displays weren't quite as common as they were. And I think the MacBook was a product that no one was looking for. It was an over-engineered product. It really was an example of how much can we fit and do in this particular product with, what was then a new processor from Intel, with things like butterfly keyboard, with all of the things that you needed to build that product. And at the end of the day, consumers were sort of like, wow, yeah, that's really, really cool. And we'll just take a MacBook Air. Thanks very much. But exactly. Can you put a But can we have a Retina display, please? I think that was the single one request. If you asked any MacBook Air user saying, what would they want in their product? Yeah, don't change the product.
What you've just described is Apple responding to the marketplace. Some people accuse Apple of not being very responsive and flexible, but this MacBook Air, MacBook situation, I think, as you've described it, completely eliminates that argument.
Apple used to believe, or sort of like a Jobs mantra, that we know what customers want. It was the old, again, you know, apocryphal Henry Ford comment. If I asked, you know, my customers what they wanted, they would tell me to build faster horses. And you know, that might have been true for a while, but at a certain point, customers also do know what they want. And they were like, I like this Air. I like that retina display. Don't try to sell me on something else. So, you know, they did get what they wanted. They did get things like Touch ID, which is a great, you know, addition, and it's a solid product, but you are going to pay more for it, and you're not going to get a whole lot of choices in the processor. You're not going to get really any choice. This is going back to Apple as the build, you know, to, you know, we're going to build from the mass markets and see what's out there. I did ask Phil, at the product intro, cause I ran into him on the street. And he tried to get away from me, but I tackled him. You know, well, still faster than he is. And I said, oh, what about the MacBook? And he was, you know, he gave me that, you know, classic Apple marketing, you know, Jedi mind trick that, you know, people still want the smaller form factor and they're still willing to pay premium for it. And there's still a lot of, you know, there's still room in the lineup for it. And I kind of translated that to as, we're not getting rid of it yet, because that would mean that we were wrong about the product, but it's certainly not a focus. The market wanted Air, and as much as we tried selling the MacBook, the market kept saying we want Air, and we finally gave them Air, and you know, we'll see how that goes. I don't think we're going to see updates in the MacBook with things like Touch ID.
I don't think so either. I think it's dead. Speaking of Air, we need some airtime here for a commercial.
Go for it.
Got to break away. Folks, we'll be back in 60 seconds, and in the second half, we'll talk about iPads and iPhones. We'll be right back.
Hello there, all you fabulous background mode listeners. I'm Kelly Gamont with the Mac Observer, and I just want to say a few words about how you can support all the things we do. If you're thinking about buying something from Apple, Amazon, or Mac Mall, just go to the Mac Observer's homepage where we have a section called Support TMO, or you can just enter macobserver.com/Apple Store, all one word, and that will take you to our special page for Apple and our other affiliates. If you make a purchase from one of our partners this way, the Mac Observer receives a small compensation for sending business their direction. Pretty cool, right? And you don't pay a penny more. This small fee from our affiliates helps us continue to bring you TMO's daily news, reviews, tips, how-tos, and podcasts like this one. So the next time you're thinking about an online purchase, come to TMO's homepage and support the Mac Observer. Thanks. Back to you, John.
Thanks, Kelly. I'm chatting with Michael Gartenberg. So, Michael, tell me about these new iPad Pros. What's so cool about them? I have this feeling that they're really cool, but I can't quite put my finger on it. It might be the bezel, might be the Face ID. I don't know. Might be the sheer speed.
Yeah, there's definitely speed, but it sort of feels like my old iPad was fast enough. I was thinking the same thing. I was in an Apple store today, and I was looking at it, and every time I see it, particularly the space gray one, it looks just so much cooler than like the 10.5 inch one sitting right next to it, making me wonder why they even kept that in the product line, because it looks so poor next to it. And I think it is that, you know, smaller bezel, although, you know, this is, you know, again, Apple marketing, you know, the full screen display. I'm like, I'm still seeing plenty of bezel there. There's no home button. So you can shrink things down. I think it has to do with the fact that they gone to this sort of, you know, iPhone 5 design language where they don't have to sort of play fast and loose with the curves of the product, making it thinner on the edges and, you know, trying and give it an overall thinner and lighter appearance. They could just make it thin enough to begin with. And put it out there. The screen is beautiful, although I can't see the difference between a liquid retina display and what the Ever Display is on the 10.5 inch, because that also does True Tone and also has the 120 hertz refresh rate. Mm-hmm. I honestly, there's a difference to be seen. And I was looking at them side by side. I'm going, I sure as heck cannot see a difference between these two things. Maybe someone can. But one clearly was blessed with being liquid, Retina display, as opposed to just a sad old Retina display from 2008.
I forgot what the liquid refers to. Some sort of display enhancement, but
I honestly doesn't. I think it's just a filter. I think it's an LCD, as in a liquid crystal display, yeah. And therefore a liquid crystal display, as opposed to an LED display, therefore as opposed to an OLED display in the phones, and they just stuck the moniker across the board, because it's just no one has given me anything in terms of what makes a liquid Retina display better than a regular Retina display, which is based on liquid crystal technology, which also has a liquid in its name. So yeah, it's baffling to me, but it's a good marketing term, especially when you don't have an OLED display. But they're great devices. Price points have gone up, and I think that if you are looking for an iPad, these are without a doubt the best iPads Apple has ever made. The question is, what are they good for? And you know, as you've noticed, I'm sure Apple opened a real Pandora's box here when they started referring to it as sort of, you know, the laptop replacement, or implied, inferred, directly said, however you want to put it, that this was something that could, now replace your laptop or your MacBook or whatever else that your computing device you could be using. And that certainly has sparked all sorts of column inches around. I mean,
probably. I think there was a computational wall for the iPads in combination with iOS, which kind of constrained the machine from it being kind of machine you'd want to use, with, you know, Windows and storage and the computational speed you need. But I think with the A12X, Apple felt like now it's time to start appealing to the professionals, hence the Photoshop and other products that Apple can now seduce developers into and say, hey, we've got a big iPad audience of professionals out there. You should start building pro apps and look at this A12X.
Yeah, it's a weird situation, because, again, what is, you need to justify the use of the A12X for something. And on one hand, there were sort of the, well, this can be, this has what they say Xbox S graphic quality, and sort of like, you know, you can get console games on this, and all the console gamers were snickering going, yeah, not so much. good
that's always that way. Apple could never make the gamers happy ever. This has been happening for 20 years.
Right. And there's great, and there is Photoshop for sure. Although I could argue you have products like Pixelmator that are better products, cheaper products. And probably the reason that they don't get as much pro love is because they don't cost as much. Everyone knows pro products have to cost at least $400 or $500 or have a subscription. If you're spending only $30 or $40, how can it be a pro product? But it goes to the question of, yeah. And again, you know, who's a pro for what? Sort of the classic, I think the one thing that Apple could have done that could have saved so much of aggravation on their part is simply set up something where if you plugged in a hard drive into that USB-C port, you could see a list of files on the device. that's all anyone was really asking for, because that sort of became the classic. See, it's not really a pro device because that, and also I can't plug a printer in. On the other hand, there's also other stuff that you would think that, wow, it has USB-C and you can plug this thing in and you know, to a 5K external monitor, and you do that and you go, oh, great, except all it does is mirror. It does nothing more than...
And you can't touch the display. You can just kind of see your work.
Right. It does nothing more than the old iPad would do, except that you used to need a dongle to do it, and now you can just plug it in with a USB-C to HDMI cable.
Maybe there's some security considerations about having an SSD visible to the operating system through USB-C. Maybe it's a door or a gateway to some security thing that Apple doesn't like. So I don't know.
Yeah, for whatever reason, we know they could do it. We know they didn't do it, and clearly you can do it because they did it for photos. And then there was the other, you know, if it's a pro device, why do I have to, for the one thing that it does import, like photos, do I have to go through Apple's Photos app first to import before I can take it into a real, you know, professional application like Lightroom or something like that?
Right.
So it feels to me like iOS has a lot of catching up to do with the hardware right now.
Yeah, you're not the first person to note that. And I think it was, who was it, Jason Snell or Vitici who said that a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah, it's been sort of the classic thing is that, you know, iOS 12, I mean, iOS was built to not be a Mac. It was designed not to have a file system. It was designed not to have all of the things that legacy computing has. On the other hand, there's some pretty smart people like Steven Sinofsky, who's a partner at Andreessen Horowitz, who used to run, you know, he was Bill Gates' technical assistant.
He was the Windows guy.
Yeah, Office. He ran Office. He basically built Office. Like, was the guy who built Office for years.
I thought he was in charge of Windows development.
No, I'm pretty sure it was Office. I could be wrong. I doubt it. Could be wrong. But the bottom line is, here's a pretty serious guy who says, no, this is a pro device. And, you know, all legacy stuff. And he pointed out that, you know, when the Mac came out, people would dismiss that as a toy as well. It wasn't a serious tool. On the other hand, the Mac didn't become a serious tool until it had support for things like, you know, large hard drives, and had support for, you know, external monitors, and had support for lots of other things that took it out of that category. And I think iPad right now is sort of in this middle category.
Right. Apple has to figure out a lot of things.
Yeah,
it's taking the software, time. Yeah.
I'm really curious to see what happens with the next iteration of iOS. I have a feeling that for this really to come complete, we're going to need to see one more iteration of iOS and a lot of work on developers to create applications that can't exist on a PC. The same way we had Mac applications that simply couldn't exist on a DOS machine. We're going to need to see applications, not just Photoshop. To me, Photoshop just brings legacy to the Mac. That's like the equivalent of bringing Lotus 1-2-3 to Macintosh. No one wanted the Lotus 1-2-3 on Macintosh. What Macintosh needed was Excel. And that's what we need right now. It's not Photoshop. We need like the next generation of applications that will really showcase this product in and of itself, so it's not compared to legacy PC. So the idea, and to me, the idea of running Photoshop on an iPad, I mean, that's right up there with like, can't we run WordStar on it? Can't we run WordPerfect?
Well, it could be just a pave the way kind of thing where Apple says, you know, look, if Adobe can get Photoshop running on the iPad, you can get your app running on the iPad as well.
Right. I think that's part of it. But then the question is, what is that app? And, you know, for many people, and I think for a lot of folks, this is still going to be a great device. The question is, how do you get people off, you know, their couches to buy? It goes back to that classic problem. And, you know, this was something that I know I wrestled with when I was at Apple. It was something that I was challenged with, and I had no clue, is how do we sell these things? How do we convince people to buy new iPads? I can give you all the reasons why they weren't. And boy, I almost got like really hit really hard over the head. Like showing all the problems without offering a single answer. It was sort of like, well, gee, thanks for telling us everything we already knew. and I don't know what gets people off to buy these things. That's probably why we're still seeing the 9.7-inch, you know, real low-end device around, because if all you really want this thing for is to watch things like Netflix or to do email, and it's your, you know, companion machine, it's not your primary machine, well, you don't really need one of the pro devices. And the other part that's baffling me about the pro lineup is, why is the 10.5 still alive?
Yeah, and a question.
For a while, I thought it was dead. I don't know why I thought it had died. Maybe because I thought it made sense for it to, but it didn't. And the price differential is significant. I was looking at a 512 machine today. just for my use.
A 10.5?
A 10.5 or an 11, figuring, and the 512 for me is, it's just a place to stuff movies. The more movies, I'm always worried that if I travel, I'm going to run out of something to read or watch. So I just want lots of content. No one, I don't need 512. I doubt very many people do, but it's nice to have because you can't upgrade. So the differential is $999 for a 10.5 versus $1,149 for the 11-inch. And I'm trying to justify that. And then I was looking at Amazon, which is now an Apple reseller, and Apple Amazon is selling it for $899.
I know what it is. I know what it is. It's the iPhone 8 syndrome. There are people who are not ready to leave their iPad Touch ID behind. They need a new they need a new iPad, but the 11-inch or the 12.9 gives them pause, and they're afraid of losing their Touch ID button, just like the iPhone 8 users.
Well, I'm trying desperately to justify in my brain a reason to buy an 11-inch over a 10.5-inch at a $250 price premium. And I can say, yeah, the A12 is going to be great, but what's that going to deliver me next year? I can't think of anything it's bringing for me this year.
Computational photography. That's where your gigaflops are being used.
But not on an iPad.
Well, I mean, iPad still takes photos and still probably uses the same camera app and still appeals to the A12's capability for computational photography. I think it's just a question of use, not of design.
I'll be really skeptical if I took pictures on an iPad, an 11-inch iPad and a 10.5-inch iPad, and they look differently. Mm-hmm. But I'd be really skeptical about that.
We got to move on. We only have a few minutes left.
It's the phones.
What's happening with iPhone sales this year? Is Apple really suffering a little bit internationally?
Well, we'll never know. I mean, that's the whole point, is we'll never know. We all know.
I keep hearing these rumors over and over again from different places.
We just know basically what we can track from supply chain. I mean, most of the places all track usually back to the same one or two sources. So it goes back to, what is the supply chain telling us? And the supply chain has been pretty clear, and not from one source, from multiple sources, who we know are Apple's biggest customers, or Apple is their biggest customer, saying they're cutting, you know, their stuff. And that just has to mean that they're not selling as many as they used to. But we don't know what that means per se, in the sense of, is Apple supply and demand in sync for a change? You know, there were no lines to buy this year's iPhones. I think we're going to still see pretty healthy sales. Not that we'll ever know what those sales are.
Yeah, right.
No way to confirm them.
As long as Apple's making lots of money, we don't care about the health of the phone system.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's also a product line that's definitely in the need, in my mind, for an overhaul, only because the buying purchase, you know, I've been through this with friends and family for the holiday season, is, what do you buy? Okay, I'm ready. I want to buy a new iPhone. What do I buy? Well, how much do you want? It usually starts off, how much do you want to spend?
Yeah, I'm hearing a lot from my readers about this $1,000 thing. They're getting kind of tired of it. In 2017, the iPhone X for $1,000 was an exotic thing, and you could go out and buy an iPhone 8 for, you know, a reasonable amount of money. But now...
Well, so what's interesting is, because of the way Apple has stacked their product lines and as well as their configurations, I would tell most people, if you don't really need a whole lot of phone, get a 7 or an 8. The problem is, you can only get a 7 or an 8 with 64 gig or 256, which is a weird jump. And then you pay an awful lot more for that 256. And 64 is kind of hard to recommend because it's the low end. The only product that Apple sells right now at a 128 model is the 10R, which clearly seems to be the product they want people to be buying. And you can get a 10R with 128 for something like $799, which again is not a particularly cheap phone, but it's a lot cheaper than, you know, still cheaper than going over $1,000. Plus,
psychological barrier comes to mind.
Yeah. And I don't know, again, the 10 line is also sort of weird. The S and the S Max is, because I'm not sure who's buying those products at 64 gig. I can't, like, it doesn't mesh in my mind, someone spending all that money on a phone and then saying, okay, but I'm only going to get the 64 gig 10S because I don't really do all that much. Well, if you don't all do that much, then why is that the phone for you?
One more question. Is OLED the future, or is micro LED the future?
I think OLED is going to be the future. As the prices continue to come down, they're great displays. And the other part is they don't last tremendously well over long periods of time, meaning that people are going to want to upgrade. So I think we're going to see more and more on the OLED side of the situation here going forward.
All right. Well, with that, we're going to have to kind of close it down because we run out of time. I can't believe it. We've just chewed up 40 minutes. It's been great, but we really got to let our listeners off the hook here.
We'll have to do it again sometime soon.
I will be having you back very soon. So it was nice to hear your voice, and it was great to have you back on the show and hear your perspectives, having worked for Apple in product marketing.
Thank you so much.
Great stuff. Yeah, thank you very much.
Best wishes for the holidays, and I'll talk to you hopefully in the new year.
Tell the listeners how they can contact you if they wish.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Gartenberg. You can also find me on Six Colors, Jason Snell's fantastic site about all things Apple. And then, of course, as an occasional guest star right here.
Excellent. Excellent. Okay, I'll see you next time. Folks, you've been listening to the Mac Observer's Background Mode. We'll see you again next week.
Take care.